We are Rogue Media Sports.
Hey, it's Mark Goodman.
And I'm Alan Light.
On today's podcast, Record Store Day founder Carrie Colleton is joining us to discuss the April 20th RSD special releases.
Plus, we'll talk live with our audience, the Sound Up Pod Squad, and find out who still listens to vinyl. And some updates from the Beatles universe.
Oh, good. Sound Up with Mark Goodman and Alan Light, the only music podcast that matters. Get it on Pandora, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Doomsday Podcast. Matt Mosley, Ed Warner, Glenn Stretch Smith will be joining us in a little while with his stretch marks and the grades that he has to deliver. And Ed Warner, freshly back from AT&T Stadium, one of the few people allowed into the and also some fans. They had a new record, by the way, Ed. Over 21,000 fans. That's a new COVID era record for the Dallas Cowboys. And they got to see sort of a ho-hum game.
I had zero doubts that Jerry Jones was going to set the early season pandemic attendance record. We know how important those attendance records are to him. Listen, I would say this. I've covered a tremendous number of Cowboys games at both ends of the spectrum. I thought I was covering the 1-15 team from 1989 in the first half and the 1993 team that won a Super Bowl in the second half. I mean, the Cowboys had three lost fumbles in a span of 10 plays. They give the Falcons 20 points, first 20 points of the game off turnovers. They failed twice on fake punts and once on a two-point conversion. They got no takeaways from the Falcons. They never snapped the ball one time with the lead. And they win the game on Greg Zuerlein's field goal from 46 yards on the final play, 40-39. Here is the single most remarkable fact. Okay, you love my stats.
Yes.
This is, if I could pick one, and I'm going to give you a lot, it was a historic comeback. I'm going to give you a lot. This is the one. You ready for this?
Yes.
The Falcons scored 39 points and had no turnovers against the Cowboys. Since 1933, when turnovers were first tracked, a team scoring at least 39 points without turning the ball over went 440-0. There have been 441 such games in NFL history. The Cowboys are the first team to win in that situation. Ever. And they gave the game ball to Mike McCarthy. That's coaching right there.
I guess it was. I think you could make the argument that some of this happened in spite of the coaching and the players somehow overcame some pretty poor coaching. I think there was poor coaching on the other side. And, Ed, as you might recall, the Atlanta Falcons are known for one of the greatest collapses in NFL history. It happened in a Super Bowl. And I assume you were there for that. And it happened with an enormous halftime lead. And here they were today, 19-point halftime lead. And for the even you know, Ed, when it got to the two-point game, right, 39-37, in my mind, I sort of thought, you know, I hate that this game's going to look so close because the Cowboys have been so horrible and they deserve to get killed. And I that was the thought I had. And then, of course, the onside kick that we'll never forget.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Falcons choking away this lead. That's the biggest lead that they've lost. I think they were down 20. They were ahead 28-3 in the Super Bowl against Tom Brady. That game was in Houston. This game was in Arlington. So forgive the Falcons if they choose not to make an appearance the next time they're scheduled to play a game in the state of Texas, because it just hasn't worked out for them. Yeah, and you talk about the onside kick that was recovered, the Greg Zuerlein onside kick, you know, recovered by C.J. Goodwin, the special teams captain, who, oh, by the way, was involved in that incomplete pass when they tried to fake the first fake punt, right? He was on the ground, poor pass.
Thought it was a good route. I liked his route running on that.
He was on the ground. He should have been on the ground. Anyway, so with the new onside kick rules, it's almost eliminated the onside kick as a successful tactic. Going into this game, teams were 11 for 111 on onside kick recoveries in the fourth quarter since the rules became what they are in 2018. That's a successful percentage rate of 9.9%. So we're really, with these numbers, starting to get a sense of just what an unlikely victory this was for the Cowboys. Now, I'm going to say this was the first time Mike McCarthy had coached at AT&T Stadium for the Cowboys. He is now undefeated in five games as a head coach in the NFL at AT&T Stadium. And one of the things I said before the game, Matt, because I think we need to put this in context, is McCarthy has a reputation among NFL coaches for being able to create a competitive team every week using whatever personnel they have available. And to me, that was noteworthy before the game, and even more so now, because while they certainly didn't play well and should have lost, they do have an NFL high 9 players on injured reserve. That's 4 more than any other team in the league. And that doesn't even include Tyron Smith missing the game today with a neck injury. I mean, the Cowboys started 2 undrafted players, Brandon Knight and rookie Terrence Steele, at the tackle positions. Each of them had previously made exactly 1 NFL start. Steele's was last week. And yet Dak Prescott has a historic performance, overcoming being out of the game for 2 plays for a possible concussion when he was hit by Deion Jones, who was flagged for a personal foul. And Dak in this game, despite not having his tackles, didn't have his top 3 tackles. We're down to tackles number 4 and 5 on the depth chart. And Dak Prescott throws for over 400 yards and rushes for 3 touchdowns, the first time in NFL history that's happened. So what a performance by a guy who last week was being questioned about their inability to win 1-score games. And in fact, he hadn't had a fourth quarter drive longer than any starting quarterback in the league. Well, all of that was put aside with his performance today.
I guess so. I mean, I got to say, even when the numbers got way up there and they were about to lose that game, I had the thought, these feel kind of empty. Isn't it funny? Yeah. In that one moment, those numbers become like, oh, my gosh, this is great. He led them back and all of that. I mean, he did have some great plays, and he ran for the – I mean, you're right, first player NFL history. I mean, that's insane. And then I'll add one, Ed, that I don't want to step on your statistical toes, but 5 400-yard passing games tied for first in team history with 1 Tony Romo. And so it was remarkable. And I would say Dalton Schultz getting heavily involved in the passing game. I mean, there were some interesting things. Now, Ed, to go back a little bit earlier in the game, I do think we have to think that the no live scrimmaging for the most part, or trying to keep everybody out, no preseason games. I mean, we saw some major ball security issues. Dalton, Pollard, Zeke, and I know one was overturned, but I'm just saying, Dak not protecting the ball, trying to flip the ball out of there and having the fumble. So this was to win this game, I would say this is the most – I don't know what I would say. Is it the most undeserving win they've ever had? Is it the most improbable win they've ever had? I mean, Ed, you've been covering this team all the way back to the late 80s, early 90s. Is this, I mean, does this really compare to anything in your mind?
You know, just watching the game, never had a sense that they were going to do what they did. Like I said, they were 2 completely different teams, first half versus second half. And, you know, what happened to them early in the game, I mean, they played a game last week and they didn't have this issue. And it's, to me, it's not a coaching issue. To me, that's on the ball security is on the players, not on the coaches. So And Elliott said after the game that they just were flat. They weren't emotionally into it. And I think that was demonstrated in their early game performance. I mean, really, though, they showed some resolve, obviously, and some resilience to be able to withstand that, putting themselves behind as much as they did. And what was really surprising was, you know, the Falcons several times, the Cowboys would go score and cut a little bit out of this lead, and yet then the defense couldn't hold and couldn't get a stop, couldn't force a punt, couldn't create a short field turnover. I mean, they not only gave Atlanta all those points off turnovers early in the game, they also gave them two short fields going for it on their own 29 and 40 when they were behind. So, you know, if Atlanta had really maximized those opportunities, then the Cowboys wouldn't have had a chance to stay in the game. They only were able to stay in the game because the Falcons didn't convert all of those opportunities into touchdowns. And obviously, Julio Jones with a drop.
Wow.
A sure touchdown that might have clinched the game, you know, on a pass from a wide receiver that was quarterback quality. And he's one of the great receivers ever. And I've seen him drop that kind of ball before when it's kind of over his head, over his shoulder, deep down the field. But, wow, what a moment that was that really hurt the Falcons.
Well, and then after that, I believe they had a 4th-and-2 go to a 4th-and-7 for having too many men in the huddle. True. Although I think on when they looked at that, Fox went to the director, Dean Blandino, you know, their Fox, the former director of officiating in the NFL, and said that there were only 11 they counted, but that apparently Julio Jones, maybe when he got hurt or whatever, went to the wrong sideline. Now, not like mistakenly, I think he just stepped off on the and that is a violation. That's too many if you go to the wrong sideline. So that was a fascinating part of that game. Okay, tons to get to. Glenn Stretch Smith's grades coming up in about 10 minutes or so. Well, I'm acting like this is live radio, right, Ed? I do. Stretch and I do live radio every day. I mean, we're taping this moments after the game, moments after that emotional win. All right, I want to talk about my bookie. All right, Stretch saying he could join us right now. What the heck? Why don't we do it? MyBookie, winning season returns at MyBookie. Winning season means doubling your first deposit. Winning season means insane props, epic bonuses, and the craziest cross-sport wagers at MyBookie. Winning season means watching live sports, betting live sports. Rejoice, the NFL has returned. That means action-packed Sundays, huge cash prizes. Get in on the action. Use the promo code DOOMSDAY and double your first deposit. New players get up to $1,000 in free play, designed to add more excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet. Bet with the best this NFL season for your chance to win big. Use the promo code DOOMSDAY, DOOMSDAY, and double your first deposit. Your winning season begins today. Only at my bookie. All right, Ed, lots to get to. What I did think of is, Stretch, go ahead and unmute yourself. He's standing by, and we'll be able to jump on with this in a second. Werner, this was I think I sent out a tweet at some point that this was that Doomsday was going to have a double meaning, and I think you sent something back like, yes, that happens sometimes. It looked horrific, and the Cowboys somehow found a way.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that I wanted to go back to was what they were able to overcome, just in terms of personnel, right? You're starting your 4th and 5th tackles, two guys who have combined for 2 starts, but man, I thought, and the numbers bear this out, I thought was so impressed with Dak's toughness. His mental tenacity, but just physically what he endured. You know, we mentioned getting hit on a personal foul and had to leave the game for a couple snaps, comes in and runs it in on the next play. But if you just look at what happened in terms of the pressure that he was under, he went 5 for 7 for 111 yards in the second half after going 6 for 17 in the first 6 quarters of the season while throwing under pressure. So to me, That's quite a statement about the kind of player the Cowboys have at quarterback. And you mentioned Tony Romo earlier. You either mentioned him or referenced a stat about his 400-yard passing games. I think the concern has to be that this organization doesn't waste this great player's career like they did Romo's career at quarterback.
Boy, that is interesting. A man who was taken later in the draft in the fourth round. Tony was undrafted, and so you're basically saying this gift from the heavens. It's happened twice now. Lightning struck twice. They can't waste this. I'm warming up to it, Ed, but I don't have the same feelings about Dak's performance that you do. And I don't know, it may be completely unfair because it's like record breaking. But for the whole time, I felt like it was just like gonna not amount to anything because it was just like they were gonna lose the game. There was no way to win that game. And so when they finally won the game, I'm still having trouble sort of changing my outlook on how he played today.
Well, you definitely have to look at it through the prism of what the Falcons did last week. I mean, obviously it's not a good defensive football team, and they lost Tack McKinley, you know, their outside edge rusher, Earl after the first quarter. But if you look, you know, Russell Wilson last week against the same Falcons defense completes 88% of his passes with four touchdowns and no tight window throws. The first time in 5 years that's happened in the NFL. So, yeah, clearly the Cowboys were not going against a great defense and clearly against a secondary that has real issues trying to cover. And the Cowboys are pretty good at wide receiver. You know, I mean, I think they had 200-yard games out of the receivers today between Michael Gallup and Amari Cooper. And obviously CeeDee Lamb made a couple of great plays. The tight ends were far more successful than I would have imagined. The thing that really surprised me with the offensive tackles being out of the game and the rush being what it was early on, that Kellen Moore didn't really ever seem to adjust and go to a quick game or, you know, use some screens, use some quick throws to the receivers in space. They were all straight dropback type throws. So I think that speaks to that they thought that they would be able to withstand the rush and they wanted a shot at the secondary. And ultimately, I think the Cowboys offense just really wore the Falcons defense out.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, there was one moment, a tight end, you referenced it. I was just like, wait, remind me who that is again? I mean, and Schultz, he stepped up. You got to hand it to him. That guy's been nothing more than kind of a blocker, H-back. We don't know, but I thought he played well. Now, a former tight end himself, Ed, joining us now, Glenn Stretch Smith. And isn't it fun, Ed, to do these things via Zoom where we can see Stretch into the you see behind him, I saw a Cowboys helmet. I saw a University of Texas helmet. And so it's nice to be able to see that. Stretch, we like to go – if people love – last week you weren't able to join us, probably my fault, but people have really missed your grades. Overall, though, are you still just stunned that they found a way to get this thing done?
I am stunned. I'm stunned that there's so many different things that I'm stunned at. I'm stunned that Atlanta decided to go for two up 19. I'm still stunned that Mike McCarthy decides to go for two down nine late in the game. And he came out and tried to explain it. And you know what? I feel like I'm a pretty good math guy, but when he said it was simple math, I mean, all of a sudden I find myself doing Chisholm bop on the desk here where you do your knuckles, you thump three times, count your toes. I mean, I don't know that anything I would say is simple math and getting me to understand what that was all about.
Ed, I would just say this. Now, this is a new thing in both the NFL and college football, is that when you're down by nine in that standpoint, rather than wait and put yourself in a situation later in a game where you got to tie the game, they want to go ahead and knock it out and try to get the two. We're seeing it happen more and more. I would say it's overthinking it. But, Ed, back to your point last week about McCarthy, it might have something to do with all the analytical work he's done. I think more and more coaches are doing what he did today.
Well, the Falcons went for it on fourth down in this game, and they went for it on fourth down four times last week, playing from behind like the Cowboys were. I don't know what the analytics are on attempting a fourth down fake punt from your own 29 when you're down double digits like the Cowboys were, or trying it again from the 40 when you're still down double digits. But the two-point conversion is an analytics-supported decision, and here's how it was explained to me. When you're down 15, you go for two because you're better off to find out if you're going to be down by one score or two scores immediately so that you can make decisions accordingly going forward. So the sooner you know if you're playing a two-possession game or a one-possession game, the better off you are strategically because you have more time then to implement whatever the necessary strategy is based on whether you succeed or fail on the two-point conversion. I don't agree with it, by the way.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the things that Mike has done, including last week against the Rams, turning down a field goal that would have tied in the fourth quarter on the road, doesn't make sense. A lot of this is illogical, I think. But I'm just giving you the analytical point of view. And I know that's something that Mike believes in to some degree. Now, Jerry, interestingly enough, does not. Jerry doesn't believe in analytics at all. In fact, when he was asked about it last year, he said something to the effect of, I think all of the analytics would tell you that most of the big decisions I've made in my life, I should have made the other way.
So. Well, I mean, the only thing, Ed, that I would say to that is they have a casino host out in Las Vegas, and they send their airplanes to pick you up to get you out there to use that exact line of thought. And right now, they are broke. I promise you, for both those guys right there, Steve Wynn is trying to get the jet in the air to both Atlanta and Dallas to pick those two guys up.
and bankrupt them at the tables.
Yes, yes, absolutely. All right, Doomsday Podcast continues. All right, let's start rolling through the grades, but I want to start where you used to beat up Jason Garrett. The special teams area, we were told John Fossil, he's a kind of an interesting guy, son of a coach, son of a former head coach at Jim Fossil. He's a colorful character, and he's had a good reputation over the years. But, boy, some weirdness. We saw some weirdness, although at the end, and probably the obviously the onside kick, what would you get? What grade would you give them, Stretch, and how would you break down those fake punt calls?
Well, initially, you know, bringing the ball out 8 yards deep is never, again, guys, that's the numbers don't support you getting the ball to the 25-yard line when you're bringing it from that deep. So initially, Pollard was bringing that ball out. I'm like, oh, my gosh, what are they doing? Now, at the timing of the game that they decide to throw that hitch out there, like Ed was talking about, I mean, I guess that you're getting a certain press look outside on your gunner during that time. Again, the timing of the game, that I mean, all I can do is equate it to what I feel like is a gambling situation, which is when the guy at third base on a blackjack table stands on 16 with the dealer showing a 10, you pick your chips up and you get the hell out of there because, you know, that guy doesn't know what he's doing. And
yeah.
it felt like that. With that, the timing of that call and when it happened in the game, I also felt like, you know, that the same way when it was fourth and four, instead of leaving the offense on the field, you're going to try to snap the ball to your up back. Now, if you've game planned that and during the week they've shown you a certain, a certain look that you feel like you could do that, but I'm looking at the game and it looked like they were in safe defense and you saw both linebackers press into the gaps, and I mean, they didn't pick that up. So I just didn't like the call, and more than that, I didn't like the timing of the call. But, you know, they gamble, and it's obvious they're not afraid to call it. Is that something you want to put on film early in the year that you give other coaches a chance to look at? I have no idea. Forever Fossil, when he was in Los Angeles, I mean, he wasn't afraid to snap the ball to his punter and pick it up and throw that hitch out there. So that's That's not something he's, you know, that's foreign to him.
But he had Johnny Hecker, who actually has completed a lot of passes.
He has a very high passer rating, in fact, maybe higher than Jared Goff.
Yes.
Hecker, I'm serious. I know.
The guy's really good, and I'm thinking he spoiled John Fossil because that Chris Jones threw a little duck out there, barely even – didn't even get it there. Okay, let's run through some of the different parts of the game. The defensive backs look lost at times. Diggs did make a nice play on the ball in the end zone, but he got burned a lot. I thought, you know, they did let the guys get behind him. There were Falcons running free, especially in the first half, constantly. What'd you think about that secondary?
Well, they'll clean up the issues with, you know, where you get a full flow one way and the tight end going the other. They were able to hit Hurst on that. Does it concern me? Yes, concerns me. When you miss Heath, guys, you know, a guy that used to get the secondary lined up, you're trying to replace him. I see an upside with Diggs. I look at it and I see him making plays. I see him show a burst to close the cushion. There's things there that, to me, turn the arrow up. The concerning thing I have is Awuzie, guys. When he can't stay with what feels like about a 65 or 75% Julio Jones with the strained hamstring and the issues that he had, I'm concerned with Awuzie. I want to see Jordan Lewis get more playing time. I think he's a better cover guy. And because of that, I mean, I've got some real issues with the secondary. I think this is going to be the Achilles heel of this football team. Ed talked early in the podcast about the tackles being down, and we'll get to that. But right now, aside from Brown being out, I mean, this secondary that you're seeing right now, that's what you're going to get. And I think they've really got their work cut out for them, and they've got to clean up this situation. And at best, I give this secondary a D.
Ooh, wow, the D handed out to the secondary.
I can't wait to see what the defensive line gets then.
Well,
let me tell you, now that you're hot and you're going to draw me off sides with this, I do see some things with Tristan Hill. But, fellas, let me tell you something, and I'll probably take some heat for this. Don Terry Poe gets his ass rolled out of there more than anybody I've seen in a long time. Now, keep in mind, they've changed the stances of these guys. They've squared their stances up. They wanted them to be more two-gap guys. They feel like they were going to move Vander Esch to Mike linebacker, and they wanted two inside tackles to take up the two guards in the center. They didn't want a free release player getting to the second level. And in theory, that looks great when you have the chalk. The problem is when the other guy gets the chalk and they're knocking your ass back off the ball 4 or 5 yards, and it doesn't matter whether he gets a free release or not, all of a sudden the defensive tackle is in your lap. That's an issue. Defensive line-wise, they almost look like they're just trying to get comfortable in a stance. They've changed the stance of the ends. Sometimes they're in a two, sometimes they're in a three. Obviously, they talked about that today on the broadcast. That'll all get worked out. The more concerning thing to me, guys, is the two inside guys. Those inside guys have got to become anchors and can't get knocked back into the linebacker level. Because I see some upside in Tristan Hill, that's the only reason I'm going to give that bunch a D as well.
Oh, wow. D for the secondary, D for the defensive line. Let's hit the linebackers. I saw one of those plays. Ed may have referenced it, to throw the tight end, or maybe you did, Stretch. He got caught in some of that trash, but I got to say, Jalen Smith sometimes, to me, still doesn't look like he's running that fast. I don't know if he's hampered by something. Who knows? What did you make of the linebackers?
Well, and he does struggle a little bit in coverage. I mean, he's more of a downhill player. I really see upside in Joe Thomas. I mean, he does some things that you know kind of make me sit back and think. Now that's how you want to see the position played. I think Jalen at times he gets lost in coverage. I think he has a hard time going all the way across the field and really being able to stay with the tight end. that can run. And so, you know, that's something they've got to get cleaned up. They're going to have to try to, you know, mix their coverages up, try to get their safeties down in there to play these tight ends as the season goes on. But because of Joe Thomas and some of the things that I saw out of him, I'm giving that group a B.
I want a follow-up question there, Stretch. So one of the interesting things that Mike Nolan, the new defensive coordinator, did in the offseason was he moved Leighton Van Der Esch inside, which I thought was a questionable move just because of his physical issues, right? I mean, he's an incredible athlete when he's healthy. But you're talking about a guy who's got spinal stenosis, who's coming off neck surgery, and now, of course, after a couple possessions in week one, now he's got a fractured collarbone and he's out again. And then Jalen, you're moving him outside, and aren't you putting him in a position where he's got to play in space more and cover, and those aren't really his strengths since he suffered that knee injury at Notre Dame?
And you're right with Jalen. Here's what I'll say, Ed, with Leighton. And we know he is a sideline-to-sideline guy. I mean, his strength is his length, and he can run. You would agree with me there, correct?
Yep.
Okay, so follow me here, and this is where I you know, sometimes I get to talking too much about techniques and those kind of things, and Dale Hansen said, oh, you got to keep Martha engaged. Bob's going to watch. Well, Martha's going to have to step out here. In this situation, when you square those guys' stances up down inside, you square those defensive tackles, instead of staggering them where Rod Marinelli had them blowing up the field and getting penetration, now those guys are more staggered stance guys. And when you say Van Der Esch had, you know, he had issues taking that lead block on. Well, when you got him down inside, if your two inside guys, your two-eye, your three technique, you know, if they're playing the way they should be playing, which is all you got to do is anchor and keep from pre-releasing the linebacker to the second level, that allows him the ability to be that kind of that angle player and be more of a downhill player. I believe that's what they were thinking. I haven't been over there and I haven't talked to them. I just, again, I go on what I see and how I see them coaching and what they're doing to get techniques accomplished. But right now with him out and like I said, I mean, Don Terry Poe, he's just a guy that's in there right now. I would be surprised if they're not looking for someone else that can get in there and anchor in that situation. It is a tough situation. But to answer your question, I think they're wanting, in theory and schematically, those two big defensive tackles to play the center and the two guards. So that allows them some ability to free a release and be able to get Van Der Esch, you know, on the edge and scraping outside of those guards.
So Van Der Esch is a great athlete, so you want him in the middle of your defense so he can get to a play on the right side or a play on the left side with equal ease, but the defensive tackles have to keep the guards and the centers from getting to the second level and taking him on. You got to keep him clean, right? Okay,
100%. That's exactly what they have to do.
Oh goodness, we just almost lost Ed. There he's back.
Had to do a little James Brown turnaround right there in his office chair. Good gracious.
All right, buddy. I've never seen a man kind of just almost.
He came unplugged. His foot came off the ground. It looked like he was hanging 10 right there. Wow. All right, Ed. I hope you're all right, buddy.
All good, buddy.
All right. Let's slip over to the offensive side of the ball. And let's start with the offensive line. Those tackles, they were down three tackles, as Ed noted. I mean, they. And both starting tackles. You got Brandon Knight out there. You got Brandon Steele. Got a bunch of Brandons involved. Or is it what's Steele's name? Terrence Steele. Sorry. What did you make of that offensive line?
Well, and here's the thing, guys. And I know you both of you understand this. When those guys are able to line up wide, I'm saying those defensive ends, they get out there almost in a seven technique, outside, all the way outside of your body. And as an offensive lineman, you don't have the experience. You don't have the, you know, you're not able to understand those angles and cut that down. it really, that's a tough job. I'm telling you, it's one of the toughest jobs there is. And 2 years ago or whenever they had to go in and play Atlanta up there, and you know, that I think it was Claiborne hadn't had a sack, and he had like six sacks. I mean, it was
– against Chaz Green, yeah.
Yeah, they were lining up so wide, and they did that today. And, you know, I didn't think either one of those guys did really bad. I mean, I thought it was almost they stayed in there and they fought. Now they – you know, Dallas did a nice job of releasing, you know, allowing a Zeke to help on both sides when those guys were wide and chip on those guys. So that didn't bother me at all. I thought they did really a pretty decent job, all things considering. Now, inside, you know, that's the strength of this team. I think Connor Williams still is trying to get his – trying to understand how to anchor and how to keep that bull rush from running him right over. And I think he'll continue to get better there. Looney's is a good player, and we know we've gotten Zach Martin. So I thought this team hung in there and battled on the offensive line and did you what felt like a really a workmanlike job. And I gave this group a B.
Okay. B for the offensive line. Let's do the wide receivers and tight ends. Two 100-yard receivers, and then Gallup obviously made a couple of really big plays. What was your assessment of that group?
You know, I'm going to start with the tight ends, and I'm going to say I was openly critical when they picked Schultz. I thought he was, you know, kind of a light in the rear end guy. I didn't think he was really going to be able to come to this level and do what he needed to do from a block in the end man line of scrimmage. He's obviously been in an NFL weight program, and he's gotten himself much stronger. He's a decent route runner. I thought he's really good with his feet, really understanding. I'm going to say that Jason Witten really helped this young man, and you can tell that because of how he is able to sit down in zone looks, and he's got a pretty good connection with the quarterback. And then I was impressed with Blake Bell. I mean, the former Oklahoma quarterback who is big and physical and not afraid to, you know, get down the field vertical. I gave that, you know, I thought that group got a B as well. Now, the receivers, to me, I thought did an outstanding job. I think this group of receivers is where the strength of this football team is. I'm seeing guys press the field vertically and do some things that I haven't seen in a long time. Now, early in the game, they weren't able to get to that. But and obviously the great catch that Amari made on the post right there was an unbelievable play. Gallup made an unbelievable play. This is the strength of the football team. And other than CD missing that block out there when they ran that little trips look and tried to throw the screen out there to Zeke, I mean, I gave this group an A. I thought they did an outstanding job.
Nice, nice. A for the wide receivers.
And tight ends.
Yep. Yep, a really strong group there. And then also, let's look at the quarterback. You know, I obviously didn't take care of the ball that one time. That was a strange play early. Ends up putting up enormous numbers, showed toughness coming back from that brief injury there. What was your – what did you think about his play?
You know, he continues to do things that you just go, wow, that's awesome. And then he'll do some things that you just – it leaves you kind of shaking your head. And it's – and in some ways, I sit back and I feel at times unfair with how I grade him because of my point of reference for Aikman. And he's – you know, I mean, we're talking about a Hall of Fame quarterback. And I know, you know, he was – Aikman was a machine. Had Aikman had that post route, that would have been a touchdown. I mean, Amari would have never had to reach and extend to go catch that. He does – I think he is the leader of this football team. I'm still puzzled week to week, guys, about how much can you really pay this guy because, again, he'll make one or two throws in the game that – you know, he doesn't set his feet or something will, you know, something will be able to make you just kind of scratch your head and wonder. And then you look at his numbers and you go, golly, I mean, how can you be any better than that? So I really think it's really puzzling for me to try to grade grade him. I mean, I think he's a heck of a football player. I think he is tough. I think he's got great leadership qualities. I give him all that. I just wish that he was, you know, that he was more consistent with where he puts the football. You know, last week, I wasn't able to jump on with you guys, but I mean, on the fourth down, if he lays it, if he lays that zero out in front of CD, I think that would have been a first down. There was a swing last week that he threw to Zeke that if he sticks it right on his face, looked like about a 20-yard gain. He put it back on his hip, and it turned out to be about a 6-yard gain. There's just some things that, and again, I could be unfair dinging him for this. I could have an unrealistic point of view because of Troy and because of what I saw him do for my time in the Cowboys, but I gave him a B plus. I mean, I saw it as a solid all around effort.
Before we get to the running backs, I would just want to say, like, didn't Dak Prescott just do everything everybody always wants him to do in terms of, you know, you're down some guys, you're playing from behind, and you're part of the reason you're playing from behind, just like Aikman was in that NFC Championship game in San Francisco, which was, I think he considers the greatest game he ever played, and he lost that game. But they were down 21-0 early to the 49ers and made this valiant comeback and almost won the game. But Dak did that today, overcame all the turnovers, the big deficit, the personnel that was missing, both his tackles. And, like, he gave everybody the first reason to believe, to me. Like, he elevated everybody's level of play in this game.
Yeah, and Ed, you're not going to get any argument out of me. I guess I'm just saying that there, you know, when you want to say great, and you want to say wow, and you want to, it just, he'll have that one or two throws that keep you from standing up and going, yeah, is that great? So I hope he continues to grow in this offense, in this scheme. And right now he's going to have two guys because they're going to have to outscore people. This defense is, I think they can clean some things up, but are they going to start getting a bunch of turnovers and getting a bunch of sacks and looking like the 85 Bears? No, they're not.
But today, Dak Prescott in the second half, 312 yards passing, 3 rushing touchdowns and a passing touchdown, with his team coming from behind. Pretty impressive.
You won't get any argument out of me.
I mean, he's trying to talk you into getting him up to an A, and you need to hold your ground. And
I'm not great. No, Ed knows I'm not great on the curve. He got a B plus. Dang good for him.
All right, Aikman all starts right, with an A, and he's the only quarterback who gets one.
Okay, running back, Zeke, and obviously Pollard.
Yeah, Zeke is so powerful, guys. Golly, does he – I mean, he does some things that – he punishes people. I mean, that first touchdown run, he does a great job, finishes runs. Here's what I'm going to tell you that I love about Zeke is how he blocks, how he protects, what he understands in the offense, how he gets out and is able to get the ball leaked down to him at times. Pollard, he didn't really do much today. I was so frustrated with him for bringing the ball out on special teams. It was hard for me to even grasp wanting to give him a very good grade. But Zeke did a great job, and I'm giving him a B plus for the job that he did.
Pollard's hurting himself in his quest for more playing time with not only what you described on special teams, poor decision-making coming out and putting his team in a bad situation field position-wise, but to fumble in the game like he did too. Now, it was called a fumble on the field and replay overturned it, but in the minds of the coaches, that's a fumble. And that diminishes their trust in him, and that's why he had 2 touches today.
Well, and you make a great point, Ed, but I think in summation here, here's kind of what I've seen the first 2 games. I've seen last week a quarter and a half, this week a quarter and a half, of what felt like preseason football. It felt like no contact practice football. And when you're doing that and you put your team behind in those kind of situations, they've got to get that worked out. And the only way that gets worked out, guys, is to quite frankly, you know, play games and to go through it. And with no preseason and as little contact as they had, I think those are mistakes that you're going to have. And hopefully they've got that clear, you know, that'll get cleared up after, you know, playing these 2 live games.
Mo's, before we set him up on the coaching and the anti-Jason Garrett coach that Mike McCarthy has proven to be, I'm sure you've had this experience. Stretch may not be familiar with it, but, you know, writers, you're sitting there, you're watching the first half of this game, and it's so one-sided. And one team is the Cowboys failing so miserably. You start coming up with story ideas, start writing your story, at least formulating your thoughts. And one of the ones I had at halftime was, what if Jason Garrett wasn't the problem? Like, what if the players are the problem, you know? And so we've seen Mike take a lot of chances in these first two games, and none of them have worked out. He's failed on every single gamble he's taken, five in all, right?
And that's
he didn't kick the field goal in L.A. on fourth down. He had two fake punts today. He had a two-point conversion today. What was the other thing he did? Anyway, so what's your grade for the coach?
My grade for the coach is, golly, boys, you're a bad gambler. That would be my first. The first thing I'd say is you're a really bad gambler. You ought to. You talk about risk reward in these situations, and I'm having to really struggle with. He got an F. That was terrible, for crying out.
Oh, my gosh.
Here's
why.
Because they really did win despite themselves in this game and despite some of the decisions that Mike made that didn't have the right risk-reward balance. And, you know, at one point, we're talking about analytics. Well, the Falcons had a 99.9% win probability, according to ESPN metrics, when the Cowboys started the possession trailing 39-30 with 2:57 left. In the last 3 minutes of the game, the Cowboys had a 0.00 chance of winning the game.
I thought that was Otter's GPA in Animal House. Yeah. Hey guys, I'm telling you, that was one of the strangest games. I mean, I watched the game by myself. I had full conversation sitting there going, what in the wide world of sports is going on here? And you know what? There's no way you can explain it. Like Ed said, he's got all that analytical stuff. But the last I checked, I think there's one team that's winning in analytics, and that's the Oakland A's. I think the rest of them are all trying to figure it out.
Well, that certainly they were early to the game. A lot of people have tried. Stretch, great work from you. You can see Stretch tonight on Del Hanson's sports special, WFAA. That's Channel 8 for people in the Dallas area. And you can also look them up on WFAA.com. Really appreciate you, Stretch. Thanks for – great to have you back this week.
Hey, guys.
We're asking about you, Stretch. I'm glad you ended your holdout and you and Mosley were able to resolve the pay dispute. And we're able to get you back on the show.
I appreciate it. I'll see you 20, Ed, a little later. Thanks a lot, man.
There he goes, Glenn Stretch Smith on his stretch marks. Oh, he's gone. Ed, I was enjoying seeing Stretch on the Zoom. Okay, we'll get back into this. Real quick, though, during this time of social distancing, celebrating a Cowboys win with friends over a beer might look a little different, as the original light beer, Miller Lite, has always been there to bring people together. Through Miller time, whether you're toasting with friends near or far, great taste is always close by. Jerry Jones has loved Miller Lite for so many years. Our old friend and colleague, Ed Werner, Randy Galloway, has loved it forever, dating back many, many years. Miller Lite is the only beer of the Dallas Cowboys. 30-year partnership with the team dating back to 1991 when the team was still at Texas Stadium, of course. During the 2020 season, Miller Lite celebrating 60 years of Cowboys greatness. Pick up special marked packaging, the Cowboys 60th anniversary imagery and logo at participating retailers. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 96 calories at 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. All right, Ed. Now that was, I mean, my goodness. See, I would record Stretch earlier, but it's fun to have all of us together there, and you were able to get in some questions to Stretch. One thing you and I, we talked a little bit about with Stretch, but you talked about McCarthy. Just he seems to have everything he's doing is not really working, but they won. So, you know, it's almost like with a kid, Steve, you know, Ed, does winning reinforce some of these like negative things we've seen, or does it somehow maybe, you know, give them the impetus to go, oh my, when you win one, you don't deserve, when you win one that you really, really deserve to lose, what does it do for a team psyche? And the truth of it is, I don't know, but that literally, we've both been covering this team for a long time. That's as improbable of a win as really I can ever, as regular season that I can ever remember.
Well, McCarthy said after the game that in any season that there are moments that you can build off of, and that this was one of them, that the Cowboys found out a lot about themselves. And I think that they really haven't played, obviously, a complete game yet. And they're very fortunate that they were playing a team that wasn't very good today, especially a team that wasn't very good on defense. That's really what enabled them to overcome this. I mean, they're now 2-35 all time when trailing by 19 points at the half. And the last time they won a game like this was in 1983. So don't count on this happening except for once every two or three decades is what I would say. And this wasn't very good. And they're very fortunate that they're not 0-2. And when you're 0-2, you almost never make the playoffs. I think it's less than 10% under the previous playoff format. There's an extra team, obviously, from each conference that gets in this year. But if they don't play better than this, I mean, maybe nobody in the division is going to be any good. Saquon Barkley is probably done for the season for the Giants, who were probably never a factor. The Eagles lost at home to the same Rams team that beat the Cowboys last week, so they're 0-2. So depending on what happens with the Washington football team, the Cowboys could, at the end of the day, be tied for first place going to Seattle next week. But they have to play a lot better than this, and I think there should be a lot of concern about how the bad parts of this game for them, like four fumbles and three lost fumbles for the first time in 40 years in the opening quarter. I mean, we used to complain about Garrett's teams being unprepared and playing poorly in the first quarter and then having to play from behind. Well, this was the epitome of that. Like, as badly as we thought Garrett's teams were and how poorly prepared they were to start games, this was that was nothing compared to what happened in this game.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. This feels like one of the weirdest experiences to win a game when you do so many things horribly and your coaches put you in strange positions. I mean, Ed, we didn't really specifically talk about it. On that 4th and 5, they're down 2 scores. There's about that. How much left in the game at that point? 12, 13 minutes left in the game. And they do some kind of weird rugby. I mean, it's go to the up back and then just try to trudge forward and everybody gather. I mean, it looked like some kind of like 1930s football play. I mean, it just kind of – I just thought it was kind of an embarrassing look that they, it was – obviously it was – it showed the desperation. They're just – I mean, it was just the whole thing to not – I mean, it's embarrassing enough when you have a punter who literally can't throw the ball 10 yards out in the flat, okay? So they've already embarrassed themselves there. And then they come at least two yards short on 4th and 5 on some kind of really non-deceptive type, you know, go-for-it punt. That was, to me, a really kind of embarrassing moment for the Cowboys.
I just think they're very fortunate to go into Week 3 and they – you know, obviously playing in Seattle is a difficult challenge, although one made easier by the fact that Seattle doesn't have a home crowd. And so the Cowboys have won up there before in hostile environments, and this will be as good a chance as anybody ever has of going into Seattle and winning a football game. But I just can't imagine what Russell Wilson's going to do to this defense. You know, assuming he gets through tonight's game against the Patriots without an injury. Look what they did against the Falcons. They blew the Falcons out. They dominated the Falcons. You know, they were up 2 scores almost the entire game. And the Cowboys were down 2 scores almost the entire game against the same team. So I think the Cowboys are going to be challenged to win up there. But If you're going to play them, you want to play them without a crowd early in the season. So it's the best opportunity the Cowboys could hope for, I think.
All right. And Ed, you know, you were out there, you were in the middle of it, despite, by the way, Fox National got involved in trying to get me out to the stadium. And obviously my long, I work for one of the great affiliates in the history of Cowboys football, but I had a hard time getting in the stadium today, Ed. What was the look of the crowd, the sound of the crowd? Give me a little atmosphere from what it was like. Was the crowd active for being such a small crowd?
It was 21,000 people, nearly all of them booing the Cowboys off the field at halftime when they were down 19. Yeah, I didn't think they were a big factor in the game. I know Dak said going into the week that he thought it would make a significant difference, even though there was just going to be, you know, a partial crowd. And Jerry hopes, obviously, to grow that, assuming they have success at these levels, that they can begin to allow more people, given capacity is 90-some thousand. That's what the Cowboys average. The Cowboys average 90,000 fans at home games, which is the highest percentage in the league by a huge number. Like, the second-place team is the Jets, at 12,000 fewer than the Cowboys average. So, yeah, I don't know. I up in the press box, it's hard to really gauge that because, you know, you're in kind of a soundproof area to a certain degree. But I don't think the fans were a huge part of anything. I think the players are in a position where they have to create their own momentum. And the Cowboys were able to do that with their play on the field in the second half.
All right. We will have another episode after the Seattle game, and this was one of those. It's one for the ages. They didn't deserve it, but they got it. They'll take it. 1-1, the best team in the NFC East, perhaps, which is just a dreadful little division. It seems. Ed, I'll give you the final word. Anything? You've got so many stats. I saw some sheets of paper that you had up there on camera a little while ago. Were there any other numbers that jumped out at you, or a final thought you want to share with our people?
Well, I guess my final thought would be, and we're talking about how fortunate they are that they won a game they should have lost, and the difference between 1-1 and 0-2 is humongous in the NFL as it relates to playing in the postseason. And you know, the last time the Cowboys were 0-2, they finished 6-10. And the only time Mike McCarthy's been 0-2 in his career was his first year in Green Bay, and that team went 8-8. So I think while obviously this was a very flawed performance, and it led to a historic outcome, the Cowboys are fortunate to be 1-1 because we'd be looking at a much more negative scenario had they not been able to pull this off.
All right, and shout out to our buddy who can listen to us now, and Frito, our longtime producer of the Doomsday Podcast, who is doing a little bit better, still in very serious condition, but we'll do some rehab soon and really try to come back from this, and we'll see what the next steps are. But the good news is Frito is communicating, and he's done really well. He was having to lean on a ventilator for a little bit while, and now he's not having to do that and as much at all. And so he's making some progress. He's communicating. Ed, he apparently, according to his brother Joel, who's done a great job, he has asked about us, and Frito wanted to know how we were doing and all that. So he's been playing some of our podcast and some of my radio show in the hospital room. But now Frito is he's able to do more and more things. He's communicating really well. So anyway, shout out to him.
Absolutely. And look forward to doing the Cowboys-Seattle game next week and a post-game podcast again.
It'll be fun. Ed, great work by you. Appreciate you being out there representing Doomsday. I hope you told everybody hello as you were social distancing. Great work also earlier today as I was texting you a bunch, and while you were doing TV, you didn't bite my head off, and I may have not been looking at the time to know what you were doing. But anyway, appreciate you. This is the Doomsday Podcast, and we will see you next week. Good night, everybody.
Hey, it's Mark Goodman.
And I'm Alan Light.
On today's podcast, Record Store Day founder Carrie Colleton is joining us to discuss the April 20th RSD special releases.
Plus, we'll talk live with our audience, the Sound Up Pod Squad, and find out who still listens to vinyl. And some updates from the Beatles universe.
Oh, good. Sound Up with Mark Goodman and Alan Light, the only music podcast that matters. Get it on Pandora, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.